Good morning and welcome to One Inch Past Scary Podcast. This is Christy Sayer, and in driving into my my studio, which is the woods this morning, the parking lot of the woods, I realized that I didn't even properly edit in terms of adding music or an intake, outtake, anything, intro, outro, whatever, or put the last podcast on my social media. So it was just kind of floating out there in the wilderness, got some listens, which is great. But I guess I'm not that excellent at self-promotion when it comes to my own work. And that is something of a continuing problem for me, that's the hardest part of anything in terms of progression in my life. The talents that I have are largely creative, and the way in which I feel my path should be going is interactive with other people, which requires this kind of thing: podcasts, speaking, getting my writing out to where people can actually read it, all that sort of thing, which obviously entails promotion, because if I'm not going to promote myself, certainly nobody else will, which, you know, that is the bugaboo, I think, for every creative person who is trying to make this, or who feels called upon to reach out or to speak to others in creative ways. And so this is something that is a hang up for me. It's my car engine is just settling down, if you will excuse all the random sounds. This is a hang up, and it's not, and I know it's not just me. I know this is across the board. People have difficulty in it, because in actuality it's selling oneself. And you know, for this marathon that I've got coming up that I keep referring to, I was able to raise money easily for it, because people are generous and kind, and I believe in this cause with all my heart. I've seen it close up. I am so grateful to these hospitals and the people who raise money for them and the people who work there, and you know, and believe in these causes, and just are so selfless and dedicated in getting funds for serving these families, so that they don't, in addition, have to worry, apart from, you know, the terrible strain of having your child being sick or, you know, afflicted in any kind of way, but then having to, you know, deal with the concern that you just can't pay those bills, or you don't have insurance, and you might actually just not be able to get the treatment that they need. This removes that barrier. So of course, you know, there's nobody out there. You'd be hard pressed to find a person out there who would say, well, this is not even a worthy cause, even if they can't contribute. So it's been effortless for me to go, hey, you guys, like, hit people up for money. You know, it's not for me. It doesn't directly benefit me. It's for these kids, and it's something that I'm thrilled to do and that I haven't been shy about doing, even though, but I am mindful that it's like, okay, enough of this even today. You know, you have asked people for this charity, and once I got to my goal, I'm like, there are other charities that need it. So I am measured even in that. So you can see, but I mean, the money rolled in, I reached my goal really easily. I doubled my goal, I reached that really easily. People were wonderful. But even so, I was just like, okay, like, you know, and they were like, do you want to raise your goal yet again? And I'm like, no, not really, because I know that people have lots of other places and worthy causes, and I feel like a goal is a goal for a reason, and then we stop. So you can see how me just being like, okay, so here's something that I've put out into the world, and I really think it's of value, and I think that it can help people, but it's coming through the vessel of Kirsty, so to speak, and I just feel so weird about promoting that too much. And that's a tragedy in a way, because firstly, it points to ego still not under control. And you might be like, well, that's the opposite of ego. If you don't feel like you know, worthy enough to put that up. But it means that I am still attaching too much of myself to the creative stuff that comes through me. And it means that I haven't yet accepted that this isn't really mine. It's universal stuff. It's universal truths. It's universal help that I have been fortunate enough to receive in my own life and to experience and to use. And now I've been asked, I've been moved upon to share it with others, and I'm still attaching it to me. And that's sad, because it does, it creates barriers. It really does. It creates barriers from me, you know, being holding back, worrying what people will think, worrying people will think that I think I'm so special, worrying that the quality of the work is not good enough, that it shouldn't see the light of day. And sure, you know, I don't think that my presentation is necessarily perfect, and it's not necessarily well packaged, and it might be completely wrong for some people. But I have got to trust, and we all do, all of us who are creative, or all of us who in any way feel moved upon to put something out there, all of us need to recognize that it's not, that it will find its audience, and for its audience, it will be enough. Maybe not perfect. That's not what we're asked to be. We're asked to just be enough and to do what we feel right about doing and to share generously with the world. So that's my first little message of the day. You know, I'm sure that if I didn't have these hang-ups, I would have been more inclined to get that out there. I would not have conveniently forgotten to promote it. Promoting is my worst thing. It's like one of those, you know, the worst chore of the day that you procrastinate, and then you do it after everything else is done instead of getting it done first. But it is, when I've done that, I feel so proud of myself, like, oh, you've done the hardest thing of this week. And so I think me forgetting to do it was totally subconscious. I just didn't want to. And that's silly. And it's also wrong, because it just does show that there's still a lot of ego attached to this. And ego, whether it looks in the traditional way as we see ego, you know, as promoting yourself in an obnoxious way or thinking you're so much better than somebody else, it's harmful. If you also are attached to ego in a way that you are just like self-conscious, you hold back, you worry that you're not good enough, it's just as harmful, because it gets in the way of the message, which isn't yours. These are universal truths. And I keep saying, the more I've studied since leaving the religion of my youth and my adulthood up until about age 40, the more I've studied religion and spiritual truths and philosophy, the more I see just threads of the same truths through all time, you know, through ancient times, are consistent across religions, across philosophies, across speakers and teachers and thought leaders. So, we've got to know that it doesn't come from our brilliant little brains. And our brains are brilliant, and our brains are wonderful, and we are wonderful and masterfully made and mysterious and fantastic and magical and all those things. I do believe, I don't want to, you know, take away from the fact that I do think that we each have magnificent gifts to give in and of ourselves, but they're to give. And they also, you know, we can transcend, the message is strong enough to transcend a poor delivery. And we really need to have more faith in the message. And I have such great faith in the messages that I am trying to put out into the world, because they have been life-saving to me. So here's one that I've really, another one. Number two message that I want to put out today. And I hope you're doing well. Let me interrupt myself by saying, I hope you're doing well today. I hope that you are feeling love coming to you from some corner of your personal world, if not from all fronts. If not, can I just say that I'm sending you love, whoever you are. I have a lot of it to give. I feel such a connection to whoever may be listening right now. And I know that we are meant to be connected today, because you happened to click onto this podcast. And if you are listening right now, this message was sent for you. And I feel great love in my heart for you. a sense of a connection and hope that you are doing well, that you know that you're enough exactly as you are right now, that you do not have to fix yourself, that everything might be a dumpster fire in your life, and you might feel like a complete failure in every regard, and all evidence might be piling up to sort of illustrate as much. But evidence in this sense, in this realm, in this moment in time, means nothing in the really big picture. And the big picture is that you are enough, that you are going to get through whatever it is that you're struggling with right now. And if you're at the lowest low in the bottom of the barrel right now, that's part of your curriculum, like I like to say. That's part of this whole thing. And you're going to get through this, and you're going to be stronger for it, and you're going to be able to help people because of it. And, you know, knowing that I have life left to live, and that awfully difficult things are coming down the pike, because that's just the way life is, I still want to say that I've been great, that I am at the point in my life that I'm grateful for all the things that I've learned through my difficulties. And I've learned more through my personal failure and my personal struggles, and when things looked completely dark with no light from any direction, than I have from things going really well and me really doing well by the people around me, and me reaching my goals and me making good choices. I'm grateful for those good choices and for those things that they brought into my life, but I have learned more, and I do believe that I've been more helpful through the difficulties. So if you're there right now, please hear my voice telling you that you're going to be okay, and that you're enough right as you are. You don't need to do anything more in your life to be more worthy or to be more complete. You are enough. And of course, getting out of bed and getting things done does make life, it's more interesting, and does make life more easy and pleasant, but it doesn't make you worth more. And to confirm that, here comes a truck to punctuate what I've just said, which is about to make a lot of noise. So I'm going to pause in this, and I will be back with my next thought in just a moment. Hang in there with me. I am back. The truck has vacated the parking lot, i.e. my personal recording studio. And I took a drink of water. I put sunscreen on my face. I feel so grown up. You guys, every time I put sunscreen on my face, even though it's so late for me and it's too late and I have all the sun damage on my face that I am so sad about, I am so proud that now at age 43, I am trying to be so good about putting sunscreen. And so I just wanted to share that very adult moment. Like, I am adulting, or as they say in America, adulting like a champ in this moment, sitting here with my sunscreen on, having had my water. So I hope you're hydrated. Let me just put a plug in for that, since hydration is such a huge thing. You guys, mental health, physical health, hydration. I'm shocked at how many people drink less than a glass of water a day. You guys, it's crazy. And I don't say this from a place of self-righteousness. I have a condition that makes me super thirsty all the time, thirsty in the traditional sense of actually dehydration, and I need water a lot more than people do, just to stay upright and functional and not passing out and hitting my head and stuff like that. So I do have so many stronger cues than most people to stay hydrated, and it's really hard for me to keep up on that. But so I'm acutely aware when I'm chugging my third, bottle of, a huge bottle of water a day, that everybody's looking at me like, are you still drinking? why? How much have you had today? Oh, I don't think I've even had a glass of water. Please drink water. I think that's a universal truth too. And this is just a plug. If you're listening, you're going to feel so much better in every way. Your mood's going to improve, and physically you're going to feel better, and everything's going to feel so much better if you drink water. This I know to be true, and everybody's dehydrated. Moving on. Please don't tune me out because I had nagged you about hydration. I love you. I just want you to be okay. And we're mostly water, so we're cucumbers. with feelings, I read. We're like so many percent water that we're basically cucumbers with feelings. I love that. Moving on, though, I wanted to tell you about another truth that I am acutely aware of right now. And it's one that I think anybody who's kind of into, if you're listening to podcasts like this, you've heard it before because you know about, you know, fixing yourself mentally. And that is that the thing that messes us up the most in life, the thing that's hardest for us the most in life, is the picture of how it's meant to be. We've all seen a meme about that a million times. We've heard it from every source possible by now. If you haven't, let me reiterate it. The thing that's hardest about life is when we fixate on how life is supposed to be rather than accept what life is and then move from there. And so if we're so, people will be like, well, how am I supposed to, you know, have goals and stuff if I'm just sitting in a state of acceptance? Well, of course, we don't just sit there and not, you know, just sort of vegetate in whatever it is. Like, I'm not going to accept that I'm sitting in this car that's getting steadily colder and just sit here until hypothermia sets in and somebody, you know, has to take my stiff, cold body out and bury it in the woods. That's crazy, right? I'm just accepting that right now, I don't have a recording studio, so the car it is, and it's pretty chilly, and people are going to disturb as they come by, and they're going to, you know, slam doors, and it's not going to be perfect, but we're going to publish this podcast even so. So do you see how somehow acceptance actually allows me to get more things done? Whereas if I fixated on, look, you know, I expected that the sun was going to be out and I was going to have a nice cozy experience in my recording studio van. And nobody was going to drive up and make any kind of disturbance. And I don't like that that's not the way it is right now. I'm really irritated that that's not the way I anticipated being. So I'm just going to have a tantrum, shut this whole thing down and hope for the best. You know, hope that something else will emerge that looks exactly like the way I picture it at some point. Do you see how acceptance actually sort of creates a situation in which we can move closer towards our goals? So that's sort of the one barrier to acceptance that I wanted to shut down. When people say, I don't want to hear this whole thing about acceptance. Acceptance gets in the way of go-getters getting what they get. And I'm like, quite the opposite, my friends, quite the opposite. There's a difference between looking at what is and going, this sucks, and so I just give up, and looking at what is and saying, okay, so how can I use this to learn, grow as a stepping stone rather than a stumbling block? How? And that is what every successful person in whatever their realm of success is. If they're highly successful in their relationships, if they're successful parents, if they're successful in business, that is how they look at things. They look at, what is the hand that I've been dealt, and how can I make the best of this, and how can I figure out what I'm supposed to learn from it, and then learn it and expand on it. So what's bringing that to mind right now is that with 1 week to go, actually less than 1 week, this time next week, I will have completed a marathon, God willing, or, you know, spirit willing, or legs willing, or whatever it is our belief system is in, Kirsty willing, for one thing, the timer's willing to stay out all night, whatever it is, that's that. Today's Monday and it's this coming Sunday. And training has gone so wonderfully. I have loved the process of it, which was such a gift. It really was a gift, because I think I've mentioned probably ad nauseum that this has been always something kind of hung over me. I started running when I was 17. I ran my first half marathon at age 17. I was a very sedentary person. I had severe asthma. I had emotional and other problems because I was in some really bad circumstances at the time. So I was struggling with trauma, which I found to be physically exhausting, as most trauma is. It's, you know, it's just a lot to deal with life when it's not traumatic, but trauma and PTSD will you know, drain a lot of energy. And I've talked a lot about that. And then, of course, I you know, like I say, I was asthmatic. So, you know, that was an additional thing to sort of deter me from being active, because I had exercise-induced asthma apart from other types of asthma. And so running as a child had almost, you know, always resulted in wheezing or a full-blown asthma attack, and this sort of was a deterrent. So I become quite a sedentary kid and teenager, and I just did a lot of lying around and reading or sitting around with my friends. There was not a lot of activity involved in my life. And then I started to run, and I ran a half marathon, and it was life-changing. It was really life-changing. I saw that, you know, my body could do things. I enjoyed the experience. I enjoyed running. I enjoyed the camaraderie of running with other people. And I just found that it was a really good way of maintaining my mental health, and that I felt physically a lot better. So I've really run since I was 17. And of course, there have been times for different reasons. Almost always, it was due to an emotional breakdown with PTSD. That I would stop. And, but even, you know, I'd run throughout my, you know, some of my pregnancies, I ran up until the day of, in some way of giving birth, or, and soon after I'd get back on the trail, shuffling along with the baby. And it's just been a part of my life, long distance running. And so it seemed odd to me that I had reached this far in my life and not done a marathon. But the marathon loomed very, dark and daunting for some reason. There was just hang-ups about it, which I don't even really want to go into or think about too much, because I've got that coming up this week. But for some reason, I didn't even want to. I just felt like I should. And that's really not a good reason to do a marathon, as far as, because marathon is kind of a silly thing to do in general. I mean, there is no reason. There's no physically responsible reason, like, you know, what this body needs is a marathon. No, not really. It's not the greatest thing you can do for yourself physically. As far as I'm concerned, there's far healthier things you could do, like many, than run a marathon. And, you know, and if it's your burning desire to have that, but it just really wasn't mine. I just felt like, you know what, I'm always going to be disappointed in myself as a long distance runner if I don't have that experience, or I don't know what it was. And then I had to really look at it. It's like, do you want to say that you've done one? And I'm like, not really. I mean, that would be nice to, you know, flex. But I got past that point of needing to tell people, oh, I've done a marathon, because I got to know enough people who just thought that was a silly and self-destructive thing to do. And then I started to agree with them. After I did enough half marathons, I would finish and feel done. Feel like, yeah, any more than this would be unhealthy. I could feel or even pick up injuries training for a half marathon. So it wasn't something that I thought was necessarily a hugely admirable goal. You know, it's also, it takes a lot of time. It's very self, well, you have got to be self-centered for a good deal of the marathon training. You're really about yourself. You're out there alone without your family. You're really fixated on your physical body and keeping it healthy and on the road. So it's really kind of, it's hard to make a case for it being a philanthropic thing. Of course, I guess I've raised some money for a charity, which does help. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily that I felt personal pride in being able to say I have run a marathon. But for some reason, I did get to the point where I felt like, you know what? I can learn something from this process. I've learned so much from running. I have gained so much from running. I have been blessed to have my biggest epiphanies in life as I've run. And life just has made so much more sense to me. And I've understood myself. I've understood the world around me. I've found every analogy for life in running. And there has got to be something golden for me in running a marathon, or at least even training for a marathon. I bet that I could find a lot of lessons. And frankly, being out there so long and listening to podcasts and listening to some quite heavy duty kind of podcasts of, you know, spiritual based podcasts. I've listened to, you know, a lot of spiritual thought leaders and explored other philosophies and tried to be uplifted and sort of also tried to expand my way of thinking about the world and to understand people better and to become more open-minded, kinder, get control over my own ego, get control over my own very small way of operating and my needs for validation or my need for attention, or understand that better and see where it was coming from and at least recognize how to tackle that and my resentments towards others and all those things. And so honestly, it's been wonderful opportunity to just have that many hours dedicated to being able to listen to these really beautiful thoughts. And those do make an impact on your life. But in terms of struggle, this training process has been remarkably struggle-free. You know, there were, I'm sure, days where getting out here has been more difficult than others, but it hasn't been, by far, it's been the least struggle of my life to keep consistent in running, because I have been mentally in a much better space than usual, and that's almost always been my struggle, getting out of bed when I was struggling with PTSD. And I'm really in a much better space regarding the number of times that I'm triggered with PTSD, although setbacks have been very, very few and far between of late. So in that way, you know, getting out and running, the weather's been good. I've been doing it over the summer. The summer has been, you know, pretty cooperative weather-wise, and I haven't struggled that much, and I've maintained an injury-free experience up until, of course, now. So with 10 days to go, or maybe 2 weeks to go, I picked up an injury, one that made me have to stop almost immediately running entirely. So I peaked. I did my, my peak week, where you're just running 40 miles a week for a couple of weeks in a row. You're running between 30 and 40 miles a week for maybe a month. So September was that, running between 30 and 40 miles a week every week in September. I got to my 40 plus mile week without incidents. And then I injured myself, which it's a cumulative thing. It's not unusual, but it's this big shock to your system, both mentally and physically, because you are accustomed to running a lot and now suddenly nothing. And it can, you know, it can be a hit on your psyche in lots of ways. And also just the endorphins that you're accustomed to running with, I've suddenly just been switched off. Bam, you're done. You know, you've been, during peak week, I don't think you're getting a runner's high that much, because you're just kind of worn down. You're tired. You're getting to the point that you're kind of sick of it. But your body's still accustomed to moving, and then you're supposed to move, less as you taper, but still a significant amount. I mean, you're still running plenty of miles a week when you're tapering. And instead of the taper, I've gone to nothing. I've been running not at all, in the hopes to fix my knee before running the marathon. And really, rest was the only way around it that I could see. I've been going to a chiropractor and doing what I can, strengthening through yoga, which, by the way, I think the carelessness in not addressing right after my marathon distance, I didn't do yoga immediately after. I went home and I did some other things and I didn't hit it straight away. It might have been one of the reasons why I got injured, apart from the fact that it's just cumulative damage and I'm 43 and these things happen. So speaking of these things happening that I've been rambling on, which if you're not a runner, you might have switched off by now, and I don't blame you. But I found myself on Saturday going, okay, I feel well enough to just do a little shakeout run, just to see the lay of the land, just to see, like, how severe is this? Are we extreme pain? Is every step making it worse? In which case, I don't know. It might be time to sell the price, you know, because I'm not interested. I'm fully fine to run in pain. I've had childbirths that went on way longer than any marathon could. And I know I can endure that. And it's not my favorite thing, but it's not something that's a deal breaker for me. But having seen my daughter just go through knee surgery, I'm super not interested in it. Shockingly enough, I don't want to do that. And I also want to be able to run long term. So maybe this marathon this time isn't happening for me. I knew this run and the run prior to it that I mentioned in my last podcast would be indicators. The last podcast indicated, by the way, the one that I went on right after that indicated that I was injured, sadly. And this one was to see, has the rest been helping? Has rest been working? What's the severity of this thing? And do I need to get real and maybe, you know, see if there's a waiting list for these marathon entries, because they often are, and so somebody else could benefit. And so Saturday, I just found myself, now this is what happens, if you get out of the habit of a good habit, we all know that it's so hard to get back into it, right? That's the worst part. It's just getting started. It's not the actual doing it, it's the getting out and doing it, the getting out the door part. And I was actually out the door, had put it off all day, made so many creative reasons. I had done a lot around the house, by the way. I restuffed my furniture. I got it all going. Looks great. But that was a procrastination for a run. I did a lot of other things, you know, the trim in the house looking good. We got some other household projects done, all because Christy was terrified of going on a run. And that's really what procrastination is all about, fear and overwhelm. It's not about laziness. My now beautifully stuffed couch will attest to that. If you think you're procrastinating because you're a lazy or disorganized person, I'll tell you that that's not true. It's not true at all. It's because you are fearful or overwhelmed. So look at those things, but this is not what that's about. So I procrastinated to the right last moment, which is my speciality and all of ours, that I knew that I would have just enough time for a run in order to go, to be ready to take, you know, photos for my kids who are going to homecoming. And I still sat in the van for like a good flipping 20 minutes, 30 minutes, just sitting there, just like getting more and more like, I don't want to do this, and I'm sick of running. I'm over it. This is such a stupid idea. And marathons are stupid. The stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Like stupid, 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 dumb ridiculousness. Ridiculousness. And I'm not doing it. Guess what? I already ran a marathon. I did it in my own time and in my own space. And screw anybody. I'm not doing this for anything. I was getting myself into a little tantrum in my car. I texted some friends and they were like, do it. You're doing it anyway. And I was like, no, I'm not. I hate you. I went, you're not my mom. Okay. You're not my dad. Don't even tell me. I'm not doing this. You didn't run a marathon like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, did you? So then don't even tell me. Such a brat. I mean, this was internal. I like to think I wasn't quite as bratty externally, but that's what I was thinking. And then I realized, okay, it's do or die, go. And it was, you know, it was sore and everything, but I think I'm going to be able to do this thing on Sunday. I'm still hopeful. So anyway, while I'm out there with my little mood, just stomping around like a four-year-old, getting all mad, it occurs to me, I'm like picturing, you know, you do a lot of picturing what the course will look like, how you're going to feel on each course. You come to kind of like, you visualize a lot, which is important. It really is. It's a really important part of the process, because when the first 3 miles suck and you're like, wait, what? I don't know how to run anymore. How do you even do this? If you do it enough and you visualize, okay, it's going to suck also in the race. So just be prepared, because your body's warming up and all that stuff. You're going to be fine. You know, all that stuff is important. But as I'm visualizing it, I'm picturing myself, oh, and now you're gimping along with your stupid little strapped up knee and your silly brace. And you just, yeah, you're slow to start with. And now you're really slow. Just all this really helpful. All these great messages I'm telling myself, but I'm visualizing it. And then suddenly I start visualizing other runners, right? And I don't see the really, you know, flawlessly athletic people dressed in their Lululemon, just, you know, or the canyons that float past me, you know, as you're like taking off, you're like looping around, they're taking the victory loop, you know, half an hour into the thing, whatever. I'm not seeing those people I've seen before. I'm seeing those warriors, the warriors who you see limping severely, not just a little bit, in mile 10, I'm seeing these guys and I'm walking, you know, taking a little breather for a second, you know, getting a glass of, getting a cup of water on the course. And I see this guy just sort of hobbling past me. And I'm like, did this man just hobble past me? And I see them still going on mile 15 and still going, you know, they're finishing a marathon hobbling. And I saw them back at mile whatever, 7, in pain. Those are the people that I'm suddenly remembering. And I'm like, yeah, you've seen people way more injured or looking in way more pain than you're feeling right now finish these things. You've seen this happen. What makes you so special, Kirsty, that this shouldn't be you? Why do you think that you should show up to this marathon uninjured? What makes you feel like you should be the person out there who starts uninjured? You've seen plenty of people step up with strapped up knees, looking, you know, not the part at all, and finishing a race. You've seen them having to drop out, crying, sad. What makes you think that you're such a special human being that this kind of difficulty, challenge, or whatever is not for you? Or what makes you think that you're not special enough that it should be for you? What makes you think that you're different? What makes you think that this isn't exactly where you need to be and exactly the lesson that you said you wanted to learn? And suddenly it just kind of like hit me, like, you have been really big on acceptance lately. You have really been big on striving to, and I hate the word striving with regard to spiritual truth, so shall I say, you've been really big on learning and accepting acceptance into your life. You really have seen the beauty of it, how much easier it makes life, and you've seen how far you have to go in that regard and how it's really not your strength. So what, when you embarked on this race, on this marathon, shouldn't call it a race, when you embarked on this marathon and you told yourself and maybe even others, I want to see what this can teach me, what makes you think that this isn't it? Like, come on, girl. There's no place, there's no room to be sad and resentful about this, because this is exactly as it is supposed to be. You said you wanted to learn something. Well, here's what you learned. 26 miles is gonna maybe cause an injury, and let's see what you can do with that. And maybe you've got to learn the humility and the wisdom to drop out on the day or halfway through. Maybe you've got to for once learn about not completing one of these things, because I'm very dogged when it comes to things, sometimes in a destructive way. Like, if it's my vision, I'll see it through. Maybe you've got to learn what it needs, you know, what it feels like when you say to people, you can run if you want, and people say, oh, I just can't run. No, you can run, I tell people. If you wanted to, you could. Maybe you just don't want to, and you don't have to want to. It's, maybe running's not your thing. But maybe people feel this kind of pain and get injured within 1 mile. I don't know. There's a multitude of things. And frankly, I don't know if I'd learned them yet. I don't think, you know, the process of this has been so enjoyable and so fun. And yes, I've listened to lots of wonderful podcasts and tried to put them to use in my life. But perhaps, just perhaps, the lesson here is the injury and how I'm going to respond and what it's going to teach me. And maybe it's the painful and wise choice of bowing out. And maybe it's the doubling down and going, yeah, things aren't going to be the fun little romp that you thought they were. And honestly, I've been looking forward to this because it is a fun race. It really is. It's really well attended, and there's these awesome little people along the way, and there's music along the way, and it's for a great cause, and it's so well organized that there's no reason for me not to look forward to it, because I've trained alone, so it would be significantly less boring. So it wasn't something I was dreading in terms of the physical strain, because I know I can do that. But maybe it's not going to be. Maybe it's going to be something that I really have to dig deep, and I'm going to learn through that, and that's going to be a great experience for me. So that little message is something that we can all apply to all of our lives right now. Whatever's going on in your life, if there's some kind of tragedy that you're dealing with, or there's some major difficulty in a relationship, instead of being so angry, like, why is this happening to me, and it shouldn't be, and I've been so careful, and all those damn ice baths, and all the damn yoga, all the damn this, all the damn that, and okay, cool, good for you. It got you this far, and you're less injured because of it, or whatever. But that's not where you are. You are here with an injury now. What's going to happen next? Let's see. Let's see what it can teach me. Let's see where I can go with this. And same going for your life. Yeah, maybe your kid is in a lot of trouble right now, or your child is not doing what you thought they should, or your spouse is really struggling in a way that you don't feel that you deserve or they deserve, or you yourself are not in a place in your career that you thought you should be, or your whole life doesn't look the way you should be. Well, how does it look? What does it look like? And what can you learn from that? What are you supposed to learn from it? And maybe it's just being okay with how it is. And maybe this depression that has you lying flat and not able to function in any kind of way is teaching you how to just be and how to drop out of life. Because I'll tell you, I needed to drop out of life for a good portion of time to address mine. And I had to fully drop out of life. And it was painful. It was so painful. And it was devastating. And it was really hard on my family, but it was the only way. So maybe not doing anything is what you need to learn to do. And I will tell you that I know a lot of people who need to at least learn to do a lot less and to stop numbing themselves with busyness. And then I know other people who really don't have that luxury, and it hurts my heart because they need the luxury, not even the luxury, shall I say, they need the gift of rest to be able to heal themselves of trauma. Whatever it is that is in your life, look at what it is and then ask it what it's there to teach you. And if it's the people in your life who are not acting right in your perception, ask yourself what you need to learn from that. Not what they need to learn, or not what they need to get better at, but what you need to get better at. And maybe you need to get better at patience and just being and giving less advice or acceptance of others, or just lovingly accepting and being with someone 100% without any criticisms. Or maybe you need to learn to get brave and to tell people the truth that they need to hear and to get them the help they need. Maybe it's none of those things. I don't know. Only you know. Again, that's where, sitting in the stillness with the meditation and the stillness, even if it's just a breath, even if the stillness is just between breaths, then yourself can tell you what you need to hear, because it always tells us. It always tells us. And that stillness is when it tells us. And we are very frightened of that stillness, aren't we? We're so afraid to hear what the self wants to tell us. Gosh, because it tells us some hard things that require some big changes suddenly. And it also requires us to stop numbing. And we numb in so many different ways. We numb in so many different ways. And our culture is particularly good at numbing with noise. Scrolling, speaking, talking on the internet, doing what I'm doing now, working. And I don't think I'm numbing right now, by the way. I'm pretty comfortable in the fact that I'm doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing right now in talking to you. But sometimes we just work. We work and we create sort of mindlessly to distract us from something else. And sometimes we are just in a coping space and we need to just cope. Sometimes the self is just like, you don't have time to address that now. We don't have space to address that. So right now I need you to just cope. And this is how you're going to cope. But acceptance is something that we can always deal better with our lives when we incorporate into our lives, accepting people where they are, accepting ourselves where we are, and then making the next correct step for us, just one moment at a time. What is the next right thing to do? And the next right thing for me to do now is to finish up this podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to go on a little, what they call a shakeout run. I anticipate that it's going to hurt somewhat, and that's okay. That's life, and it's not going to hurt in a way that I can't get a message from it. Either stop running now or you can do a little bit more. But that's what I'm going to do. And it's not something that I'm necessarily looking forward to, but I know it's the next right thing to do in this moment of time. So thank you for joining me. I know that sometimes my style can be somewhat rambling, and I appreciate you coming along. I hope you got some cleaning or some driving or some exercising done, or some just sitting and enjoying the voice of somebody who is feeling a connection to you and wants the very, very, very best for you and knows that you are a valuable creation who is already enough and always will be and always has been. Love you lots. Talk to you soon and have a great one. Bye.